Hello there, fellow peregrinos. My name's Bradley Chermsard. I'm a two-time pilgrim. I have walked the Camino Portugués, I've walked the Camino Francés, and I'm also the author of the international best-selling Camino de Santiago memoir, The Only Way is West. I'm also the host of the Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast. So, if you're ready for this week's episode, go grab your boots and let's go Camino! Hello there once again, fellow peregrinos. Welcome to episode 68 of El Camino de Santiago Pilgrims podcast, where we talk about planning, packing, and all the great things that can happen and tips and tricks for your walk to Santiago. And this episode, we are in for a treat because we're talking to a lady who has walked from San Jean-Pied-de-Port all the way to Santiago, and that was in 2018. During the months of April and May. So a spring Camino, Arlene Lasky from Edmonton, Canada. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's so nice to be here. I've been listening and I've really enjoyed them. So happy to be here.
Well, you are now at the start of the show, Arlene. And I don't know why. I've just got it in my head that I want to go, Arlene, 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 Arlene. I've been doing my Wim Hof breathing exercises, which give you a little shot of adrenaline. You know, they call him the Iceman. So I'm feeling charged. So Arlene, you know, when you stumble into the pilgrim office after having walked 500 miles and the lovely guys behind the desk, they always ask you, what was your motive for walking the Camino? Religious, non-religious, others. Why did you walk 500 miles across Spain?
Well, I would say more spiritual than religious. I am a Catholic, a Christian, but I don't really go to church regularly. So it wasn't so much about the religious aspect as the spiritual aspect. You know, getting away from it all, just kind of unplugging from the world and all those commitments that we have. And it was also a really great chance to spend time with my daughter because she wanted to come along. And we've been running marathons and half marathons together. So it was really a good thing for us to do together.
Oh, wow. So you walked with your daughter?
I did.
Okay. So who came up with the idea?
Well, I had talked to a fellow just kind of casually at a barbecue a couple years prior, and he said, oh, have you ever heard of the Camino? And I didn't think I had, but later on I remember that I had heard about it a couple times. But he said, oh, watch the movie The Way. So I watched that, and I think Rachel, my daughter, watched it with me. And she said, oh, we should do that together, Mom. And then I started talking about it with other people. It turned out there was six of us from Edmonton that went. We didn't walk the whole way together, but my daughter and I did walk the whole time.
Okay, so it was your daughter that kind of first floated the idea by you. And since you were a marathon runner anyway, it just seemed like a natural thing to do.
Right, yeah. It was something that we could do together and really enjoy.
So I'm intrigued because I'm a runner as well, or I was until my knee blew up. But I love to run when I can. And I wonder how the challenge of running a marathon compares with the challenge of walking one every day nearly I'm exaggerating there because a marathon is 42 kilometers and, you know, rarely do you cover that kind of distance, maybe on the odd day. But how does training and running compare to actually just walking day after day?
It's very different. And I thought, oh, it'll be a piece of cake after running. And it wasn't. It was totally different because it's that day, every day, day after day, doing the same thing. And we even found that we didn't like to do the longer distances. Like, we tried to keep it to about 20 to 25 kilometers a day, and it was so much better for us. But so I was kind of arrogant thinking that, oh, I can average 25 to 30 a day. But no, it didn't work out that way.
What do you think about the psychological element as well of walking so far every day compared to, for example, running a marathon? Because I found one of the biggest challenges, for example, when running a marathon was similar to when you're walking as well, because I constantly think about how far there is to go.
Yeah.
So that kind of psychological stress that maybe we put on ourselves, how do you deal with that? And how would you advise others deal with that?
Well, the thing about the marathon is it's one day that you're doing it. So you don't have to do this every day, which is quite different just to think about that. But with a marathon, say you're doing 42 kilometers and yeah, you start counting down after some point. Okay, I got 10 left, 9 left. And if you do that on day one of the Camino and say, oh, I have 800 left, you're never going to want to go the whole way. So I think if you break it down into small pieces, like this is what I'm going to do before coffee. This is what I'm going to do till lunch. Yeah, this is what I'm going to do today. It makes a big difference.
Yeah, I really like that approach. And that's an approach I actually learned myself in my last couple of Caminos, because I was always thinking, right, we've got 30K to do today and I would try and bite off like 20 without a break, you know, to get ahead. And there's just no need to put that kind of stress or pressure on yourself. And I love what you said. Like, it's very similar to the kind of thing me and my wife got, the routine we got into. And it's a good omen because she's called Rachel as well, like your daughter. So,
oh, nice.
So yeah, great minds think alike. But anyway, so yeah, you'd walk for like, I don't know, an hour and a half, you start your day. And you kind of, you know, kind of shadow plan where you're going to stop for coffee, and then you'll walk for another hour or two, and then maybe think about where you're going to get a pilgrim menu or something like that a bit later in the day for lunch. And then you can walk a bit further or just stop there. And I think breaking the day into doable chunks makes it a lot easier. Whereas doing a marathon, you just can't stop. You've got to crack on and on and on and on and on. So.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
I have to ask you this question, not because it's a competition, just I'm a runner and I'm intrigued as well. What's your fastest marathon time?
Oh, I'm not fast at all. 4 hours and 45 minutes.
That's really good. You get over the finish line and you
it doesn't matter. Everybody gets the same medal.
No one's counting, and you know you're all in the you're in the pub drinking beer at the end, aren't you? So that's what it's all
about.
So lovely. Okay, so marathon runner, hiker, long distance hiker as well. So you are just your experience when it comes to this kind of stuff. So,
well, I hadn't really done any hiking before. Right? I've been like, I go on lots of walks in my community, but I haven't gone on any long hikes or backpacking expeditions. So that part was really different.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm glad we challenged you in that way as well. So there was a spiritual element as well as a physical challenge for you as well. So I'm going to put you on the spot here and ask you, if you could only take one thing with you, as well as your shoes, backpack, socks, clothes, only one thing that was really important for you. Only one thing. I mean, I'm always like intrigued about people's packing strategies and what's going through their head and their motivation. So what would it be?
Well, I would have to say I had this, we call it a fanny pack. I think you guys call it bum bag.
Yeah.
And in that I had my, like my guidebook. I had my phone. I had a couple of snacks and my credential and my passport and everything I really needed, and money and some like little bit of chapstick and sun cream. And it was all
sounds
in
like
there.
A big fanny pack, that one.
It was actually pretty roomy.
You sure that wasn't your backpack?
No, that was it. And that was great because everything was really closely available at a moment. So it was handy.
And the best thing about having all of the things you need to have to hand while you're walking is you haven't got to waste energy taking your backpack off your back to try and get money out or passports. So you've got your credential in there. So when you can get a stamp along the way, you just get out of your pack, get a stamp, slip it back in. If you want to get something to eat, you just take some cash out or a card and you get something to eat. So everything you could possibly need while you're walking is in that fanny pack.
You bet.
Okay, good. I like it. It's all about convenience and making things as easy as possible. Okay, so one of the hardest things about the Camino is, like we said, adjusting to walking so far, so many days in a row. So these are often the moments that make our Camino. They can make us or they can break us, not only during the Camino, but thereafter as well, because we can draw upon those experiences the resilience that we sometimes find inside ourselves that maybe we didn't know we had. So I want you to tell us your lowest, hardest, toughest moment on the Camino. Feel free to go into detail, tell the whole story and what you learned from it and how you'd advise others to come through difficult moments as well.
Okay. There was actually two. One was physical and one was kind of more emotional, mental. But the physical day that was really, really hard for me was we had stayed at, I think it's called La Laguna, is the stop just before O Sobrero. And I had had a stomach bug or something overnight, so I didn't sleep well. I wasn't feeling good. Didn't have much energy, but you still got that little uphill before you get to the top. And it started to snow, so it was cold. And we had gloves, but they got wet in the wet snow. And we were cold. I was miserable. My daughter was not too bad, but so she was kind of cheering me on, which was good. And it was also a Sunday, so nothing is open. And so we just didn't even stop in O Sobrero. So we kept going, and it was quite a while before we found something that was open. So finally we could go in, warm up. And this one place had a big roaring fireplace, which was just so great. And all the pilgrims were in there. We had hot tea, and I felt so much better after that. I had a little bit more strength. And then we finally got to, I think we were staying at Tria Castella, and we were on the fourth floor of this little place, and the guy at the desk said, "I'll carry your bags up," which was so nice. And then my daughter took care of me, so that was really special. She did the laundry for us. She got me an extra blanket, and I was able to relax, and I felt a lot better after that.
I think what that brings to me here, is a question that somebody asked me in the Camino Answers for Camino de Santiago Questions Facebook group, and that is to walk with your partner or to walk alone. And you've just described to me one of the advantages there of walking with someone that's close to you, like a next of kin, is that when you do have these hard times, you've got someone who can pick you up like your daughter did for you.
Yeah, oh, for sure. And that's good. It gives her strength too. So it was good.
And how did, for your kind of mother-daughter relationship, I mean, would you say that it brought you two closer together? It strengthened your bond?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. We got so that we were so in sync as we were walking, like walk at the same pace. It was no arguments or discussion about how far we're going to go. It's like, okay, this is good, and let's stop now. And we even started eating the same things. and it was like we were just so in sync. It was great.
Eating what, may I ask?
Like the pilgrim menu. We would order the same thing off the menu, and not that it matters, but it was interesting that, yeah, we were really, we were already close, but after that, we were even closer.
Like a mother, like daughter, eh?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right. I mean, I also got from that one thing is just like also, and it's a point you brought up that hasn't come up before, is that just to be aware that most of Spain does close on Sundays. The big supermarkets will be closed. It's not like the UK where things are open. I imagine the same in Canada and the USA, Australia, and most other Commonwealth countries they may be open for limited hours on a Sunday till 4 o'clock or something like that. In Spain, most shops close. So be aware, if you think you're going to get something on a Sunday, you probably will be mistaken. You do find the odd supermarket open, like a Hyperdino or something like that. But the main shops, and then often the more expensive ones as well. So just be aware of that. That's a really good point. And you mentioned again the pilgrim menu. So look out for those pilgrim menus as well. Don't make the mistake of choosing the most expensive thing. Obviously, if you can afford have the most expensive thing on the menu and you like to treat yourself, why not? But if you are looking to save a few pennies along the way, always ask if there's a pilgrim menu, because often there is, and it's often a hearty meal, as we say. So yeah, lovely stuff. So from your hardest, lowest moments,
And I had one other day that was really hard too.
Okay.
It was the mentally hard day.
Tell us.
There was a time where we had to make a choice. because I had a certain day that I was meeting my husband in Porto after we walked. And because we thought we could go further per day, we were running late on our schedule. So we had to decide whether we wanted to walk further every day or if we wanted to skip a little bit of the walk. So we actually made the decision to take a bus from Sahagún to Lyon. So we missed 50 kilometers. And that was a really hard decision because, like, we were going to miss, lose our pilgrim family, all those people we had gotten to know, because they would be 2 days behind us. And it just kind of felt like cheating, even though we're walking 750 kilometers. It felt a little bit like cheating, but I'll go back someday and I'll do it. But it was a really hard choice to make. And one of your other guests had said she didn't come to suffer. So that's kind of the way we felt too. It's like, we don't want to walk 40 kilometers a day to catch up. We'll take the bus. So that was, it was just a hard decision.
Yeah, that's Zara Rizvi. She said that. And yeah, really nice words that she said that about, you know, not coming to suffer, you come to enjoy yourself. And at the end of the day, I mean, seeing your husband would enhance your trip. You're still going to get your Compostela. You still had the experience. You know you were capable of walking those 50 kilometers. So I don't think 50 kilometers for that reason is, you don't have to have a reason if you want to get a bus, you know. So you did it, you enhanced the experience and made it even better by meeting your husband in Porto. So who cares about 50 kilometers?
Yeah, you did it. Right.
And that's all that matters. And, you know, it just, I think even taking the brave decision to go and walk across Spain, you know, is commendable personally. So whether you have to walk some, all, or a little bit of it, I think it's worth celebrating. And my hat, I tip my Imagineer hat to you for that. Maybe I'd like to touch upon meeting your husband at the end in Porto, as that could be a nice finale for you and your daughter, because your daughter got to see her dad as well. Okay, quick question now. One piece of advice for carrying your feet, one piece of advice, what would it be? Most important piece of advice.
You know, I was really lucked out with my feet. I must have really good feet because I never got any blisters and I didn't do anything special. I didn't put Vaseline or do any kind of taping or anything. But I did have really good socks. So that would be one tip, because I had good socks that fit really well, didn't slide around, didn't crumple up in any places. That was good. And then at the end of the day, one thing we did maybe not every day, but we tried to quite a bit, is lay on our beds with our feet up against the wall. So you're like at a 90 degree angle, and it really helps with your circulation and any swelling of your feet. And that was really good.
That's a nice tip, actually, because I guess you do that, the blood comes out of them as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It reminds me of a yoga move where you, I don't know the name of it, but I know it leads into the plow. But you lay on your back and you put your feet up in the air, and you can literally see the blood running out of your veins. So that's a really, really interesting approach. I really like that. Stops the swelling, and maybe the hot feet on the cold wall is quite soothing as well, I imagine.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, okay, lovely stuff. So nice piece of advice there. Talking of advice, what's the best piece of advice you heard or read when you were preparing for your Camino?
The best piece of advice I got, I don't know where I heard it, but someone said there's a pilgrim group, and I had to Google it, I think. But there is, in Canada, there's a group called the Canadian Company of Pilgrims, and they have different chapters across Canada, and we happen to have one in my city. So I started going to their meetings. They have meetings a few times a year, as well as walks. Like right now, we're walking every Saturday morning, and the meetings are great because there's always good information about walking the Camino, but you also just get to pick people's brains, and it becomes like this is the norm to be a pilgrim. It's like everybody here has done this or is going to do it. It's like, oh, well, I can do it too. So it was really great to connect with that group. That would be my best tip.
So get a bit of peer group support.
Yes.
good stuff. Yeah, really good idea. I mean, we had another guest that mentioned that she joined a walking group when she was back home, and that way she was getting tips from the group on good walking practice. And that sounds a silly thing, good walking practice, you know, because obviously we just put one foot in front of the other and go walking. But as you soon find out when you're doing it day after day, it does become, can become more complicated than you imagine. So, okay, so find some peer group support, and then you've got a whole wealth of advice from lots of different people and a collective group motivational energy.
Yeah, that's right.
Love it. Okay, love it. What surprised you most about yourself in the Camino? Must I just say, that question is sponsored by Michelle Lassard from the Camino Concierge. Well, not sponsored by it, but she came up with that question. I thought it was a great question. So, Michelle, if you're listening from Camino Concierge, hello. So what surprised you most about yourself in the Camino?
I guess just the capacity to keep going every day. Like, you could be so tired and no energy at the end of the day, and then the next morning you're ready to go and do it all again. Your body is so resilient. And even there was one day that I had a really sore leg. I think I was getting a shin splint, and I put a little bit of ice on it, and in a couple of days it was better.
So just
the resilience.
Yeah, you get up and go again. You support the limits of what you think you can achieve with your body, just keep expanding, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that's one of the Camino's biggest lessons for me personally. And what about the Camino? What surprised you about the Camino?
Well, I think everything is a little bit surprising because it's so totally outside your normal day-to-day expectations. Like walking through all the villages, and you get to see a different side of a country that you would never see if you were on a bus tour or moving around on trains or airplanes, and meeting so many different people from all over the world. That was amazing.
I mean, for me, it was like when I first did it, obviously the novelty kind of wears off a little bit when you do it a few times, but it's like how simple people live in these villages that you'd ordinarily never, ever, ever think of going in your life.
That's right.
And, you know, villages that you know, where time has stood still in many respects. And, you know, there's... you know, technology doesn't seem to have touched it, and the old values are still alive. You know, just something as simple as sitting outside your front door with your door open for anyone to just walk in and out, saying hello to the neighbors, to the passers-by, and that is everyday life for the locals, and that magic is still alive. You know, you can't leave your front door open in England. You know, someone you don't want to come in is going to come in. You know, so.
Oh yeah, absolutely. That was amazing. Like, there was one place we were just having coffee, and this lady, the bread truck came up, so she came up.
I love the bread truck. Love the bread truck.
And she had the most beautiful tulips growing in her yard, and we commented on them, how beautiful they were, and she started just going on and showing us everything, and it was special.
So much pride as well in those simple things.
Yeah.
And when you mentioned the bread truck, I mean, when I first saw that bread truck, that was the most amusing thing to me in the world. You know, you get this, it's really quiet in these villages, nothing stirring, no one's around. You think maybe everyone's going to jump out and shout surprise any moment. And then all of a sudden this van comes skidding into town, speeding around the corner into the church square, where there's only, I don't know, some pigeons kind of present. And then you hear them honking, beep, beep, beep. And all of a sudden kind of all the locals come around, and you see some kind of grandmas, and they've got their purses out, and they're kind of rooting through their purses, looking at what bread they want to get from the back of the van. And it's just magical, you know. Me and my wife were talking about the concept of a milkman the other day.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, like we don't have milkmen in England anymore. It's a shame. We still have postmen, but we don't have milkmen. I think the big supermarkets have put them out of business. But just, you know, little things like that, all the magic of the old days is still there. And I think to me that was the most surprising and the most charming thing, one of the most charming things about the Camino. So I'm so glad you mentioned the bread man there, because I've forgotten all about the bread man. Okay, so we're talking about like stuff that surprised you. So I wonder if there's like a hidden gem on the Camino, a town, city or village that surprised you about how nice it was. People talk about León, people talk about Burgos, people talk about Pamplona, but maybe there was a place where you thought, wow, you know, that's a lot amazing. You know, I never heard of that place, but it's beautiful or amazing.
Yeah, and we found that, well, I think it was more my daughter, but I kind of felt this way after a bit too, is we didn't like the big cities as much because they just seemed to be busy and noisy, and we liked the small towns, the little villages. And the hidden gem, I would say, though, is Belorado. That was our first, our only rest day. It's the only place I slept two nights in the same bed.
Wow. Okay. So you stayed over.
Well, we actually planned that in advance. She decided that we should have a rest day. And the albergue we stayed at is called Santiago, I believe. And it has an albergue section, but it also has a hotel section. So we stayed in like a hotel room. So we had our own private room with our own private bathroom. And
how nice does that feel after you've been in the albergues?
Oh, it was so nice. And I think I needed the rest day as much as she did, because I slept until like 9 o'clock in the morning, which was unheard of. And they had like everything there. There was even a pool there, but it was too cold for us to use that. But we did our laundry in a washer and dryer, and we explored the village. But the town is very nice. It has all these buildings that are painted, and it's really lovely. And they had a little, I think we went in this museum, I think it might have been the tourist information area, it had this little museum in it. And above the town, above the cathedral there, they have a, there's a, I think it's a ruins and a cave that we walked up to, which we would never do on a day you're walking, but we had a day off. So we got to explore a little bit, and there was such a good view from up there. And we really enjoyed our day off that.
So Belorado would be your hidden gem, your place that maybe, if you're thinking of discovering something different, unique, could be worth a stay over an extra night, and you get to know the town and city kind of a lot more intimately that way.
So
is Belorado. I was going to ask you another question about Belorado for a moment. Maybe it will come back to me. So a favorite albergue, you mentioned one in Belorado there, and you said that was the hotel and Albergue Santiago. Was that the one you were going to recommend?
I think it's called Santiago, and it's the first one on the right when you come into town.
Okay. Is that the one you'd recommend staying at, or you'd recommend?
It's a good one, yeah. I liked it. But there was so many that were wonderful, but the one I was thinking of for this question was in a little town called Ledegos, which is just a little bit before Sahagún, and it's called La Morena. And I guess it's named after a lady, because there's a picture of this beautiful young woman in the albergue, and it's just, it's a fairly new place, and it has everything, because there's really nothing in the town, so it's a good thing. But there's a bar, so we socialize, there's a yard, there's a washer and dryer. The albergue is very nice and clean and modern. And I think we were the first ones there, so we could choose what bed we wanted. And then they had a dining room for the breakfast and the dinner for the pilgrim meal. And we did lots of socializing there. I think that was the last day we were going to see people, because we were going to take the bus the next day. And so we got to socialize with those pilgrim family that we had created over the last few weeks.
So that's in Ledegos, Ledigos, which is Ledigos, 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 and that's called La Morena, which translates as the beautiful kind of tanned lady. La Morena in Ledigos, and that's the albergue to look up. And I'm just curious as well, talking about Alberta, because my wife is, understandably, she's very hot on hygiene. And I was worried about taking my wife to an albergue when I know she's hot on hygiene and stuff like that. So how did you and your daughter find the albergues in general? Like, were you comfortable in them? Any kind of hygiene tips that you could offer? So
we were pretty comfortable. Yeah. We had our own, like, we had our own shoes for in the showers, like flip-flops in the showers and things like that. And most of them were fairly clean. We actually tended to stay more at the private albergues.
Right.
They seem to take a lot of pride in them. So we were quite happy with the ones we happened to be at. And we had no problems with any bed bugs or any dirtiness or anything. It was good.
Yeah, I think it's a really good point you make there as well, because sometimes, for example, the most basic alberg, the most economical, might come out at like 5, 8, 10 euros, but if you pay an extra 5 or 10 euros, you pay 5, 15 or 20, what you get extra for your money is exceptional. It's like going from economy to business class sometimes. Because you do get that, the maybe some extra space, you'd get some extra facilities, and those little extras when you are walking so far can mean so much. And they can be, you know, things you might ordinarily not think are so special, all of a sudden become like five-star fantasies.
Oh, that's so, right. Like, we usually had hot water for our showers.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's not always a given in all of the...
For the
most basics. That's a good point. Yeah, that's a really good point. So,
and another really, really nice albergue was in Villar de Mazarif, I think it's called, and that was the Casa de Jesus. And you would probably appreciate this. It was Spanish Mother's Day. It had a really nice vibe, but it was Spanish Mother's Day, and there was a football match between Madrid and Barcelona that was on the TV. So a lot of the locals came as well. So we had a really good evening that time.
So you tap into the local, the partisan football fans as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a big thing, obviously, in Spain. And most people are either from Barcelona or Madrid. And you've got to choose a side. Sometimes you're better off to sit in the middle and not do that. But...
we didn't choose.
No. Wise decision. The Camino is full of colourful characters. You know, just people that you might not ordinarily meet in everyday life. I've said this so many times on the podcast, and I just wonder if you saw anyone carrying anything strange along the Camino, or any colourful characters that you met along the way. Anyone that stands out?
There's a few. lots probably. But what we thought was strange for somebody to carry, there was a couple with two babies. I'm pretty sure one was maybe 6 months old and the other was about 18 months old. And they had them in their backpacks. And they would let the older one run around once in a while. And then all this other stuff hanging from their backpacks. I'm sure they must have had to carry a lot of diapers or nappies. But they were walking, and we saw them several times. And it was just, we were just amazed that you would bring two young babies to the Camino.
That is very, very brave.
Yeah. Yeah. And...
lacking sleep and walking 25 kilometers per day. I'm not sure that's a good cocktail for being being calm and not irritable. But I'm sure they loved it. I'm sure they had a great time. I'm sure it would have given some amazingly influential experiences in the baby's formative years. Even though they might not remember it, I'm sure it's the special energy of the Camino will help them grow into something special. Did you get to chat to them at all, or were they just kind of notorious?
They spoke German or something, so right. We did not talk with them. But we saw them several times over a Brilliant. Few period of a few days.
Well, I guess as long as you're not sharing a bunk next to them, then you'll be okay.
Yeah, I think they were at one of the albergos we stayed at, but in a different room. So
wow, that is
yeah, that's
so
brave.
That is definitely something different you've seen carrying two babies.
Yeah.
Were you going to add to that, or?
Well, I was going to talk about another fellow we met who was.
Yeah, please do.
Pretty nice. He's a young man. He lived in Barcelona, so he just left home one day and just told his mom he's going for a walk, I guess. And he was walking the Camino from Barcelona, and somewhere along the way, I can't remember where we met him. I think around Los Arcos, and a dog had adopted him. So this little dog named Lola just kept following him. He tried to shoo it away, and it wouldn't leave him. So he had been camping sometimes, and the dog would stay with him. So at one point he decided, okay, I will adopt this dog. So he did whatever you have to do to adopt the dog, and he was going to Santiago with this little dog.
Aww.
And it was so cute. Yeah.
What a nice story.
Mm-hmm.
I'll have to tell my wife that one. She'll really appreciate that. We've got a little rescue dog, and I don't know if you had it. We did have a couple of, you know, moments where animals would kind of follow us for a short stretch, and you kind of think to yourself, shall we kind of encourage it to come on? Should we? But to have this dog follow you the whole way to Santiago and then become your best friend for life. That's a beautiful story. I'm sure my wife's going to cry about that when I tell her. So,
yeah, and that was Mark, and I think his name was Mark, but the dog's name was Lola.
Okay, Mark, I hope you and Lola live happily ever after, wherever you are.
Bet.
You're a good man, Mark. You're a good man. So let's jump into some what we call what I've christened the lap of honor round. So you went to finish there yourself, and often for the pilgrims that arrive in Santiago, the big question is, do they stop or do they go? Because you can carry on another 3 or 4 days to finish there until the end of the world, as it was thought to be back in the times before the Americas were discovered. So you did a lap of honor, and this is your lap of honor for the podcast now. So have you got a favorite Camino blog, vlog, and or film?
I would say the... for a vlog, the Efren Gonzalez, he has the really great drone footage, and he's done numerous Caminos, so he is really good.
Efren Gonzalez, okay. So my next question was going to be a social media personality, but that is Efren Gonzalez himself, isn't it? So
yeah.
Favorite food and or drink on the Camino?
Oh, I'd love the cafe con leche and the vino tinto. And I don't know if this is what it's called, but we called it cerveza limón, where it's like some beer and lemonade. And we really like that. It's very refreshing.
A little twist of lemons. Yeah, it's lovely. And after a long walk.
Yeah. And the tarta de Santiago.
Of course. Yeah. The almonds.
Yeah.
Almond
yeah.
cake.
And I learned how to make that, so I can make that one pretty good.
Now you're just showing off.
Yeah.
Okay. One thing you wished you'd packed?
A light day pack.
Explain.
Like you can get ones that really don't weigh anything, but they just hold enough to carry for a day or to go into town or do your shopping, or those days that you use that really great service of the bag transport and you just need a day pack.
Good tip. Very, very good tip. One thing you didn't need and wouldn't take again?
Well, this would maybe depend on which route I was doing, but we had carried these fairly heavy rain pants, and we wore them one day, and they were very uncomfortably hot because it just traps all the heat inside your legs. And I don't think I would bring those again, but maybe if I was doing the Camino del Norte, because I think you might need them a little more there.
Sounds like you the weather was playing with you a bit. You were too hot one moment and then freezing with the snow the next.
Right, but we only had a few days that were either rain or snow. There was not that many, and it wasn't worth carrying those pants.
It's just worth noting, though, you did go in April, May, so that wasn't even winter when you went, and you still encountered snow. So I think that's the moral of that story is make sure you've got apparel for all weather, for sure. Oh, so true.
And layering the clothes is really helpful.
Yeah, definitely layers. You need more layers than a lasagna, that's for sure. Okay, so a quote or mantra for tough times on the road.
Well, when we were on our way to Santiago, we were on a train from Paris, and we started talking with this girl who had done the Camino and was doing it again. And she said, and it stuck with me, she said, the Camino is the easiest and the hardest thing you'll ever do. Because it's the easiest because you're just doing the same thing every day. Get up, you walk, you go to bed, you get up, you walk, and so on. But it's also the hardest because whoever in their life walks that far.
I wrote the exact same words in my book as well. I remember thinking, having that realization, it's the best and the toughest thing I've ever done. That's what I wrote. Yeah. So, And it's in some strange way, it's also the most satisfying.
Yeah, for sure.
So, a guilty pleasure you may have carried with you.
Well, I didn't carry it, but Rachel did. She brought her iPad.
Right.
And what we would do sometimes at the end of the day when we were just wanted a little bit of downtime, we had one of those splitters so we could each put our headphones into it, and we would cuddle up on one of our bunks and watch Netflix on her iPad.
Just to escape, just to relax, wind down.
Yeah, so, and otherwise we didn't use very much technology. I used my phone as a camera, but we didn't use a lot of technology during our walking. It was more just at the end of the night. And
one of the perks of being a modern day pilgrim, the medieval pilgrims have that to fall back on. They just noughts and crosses on the wall. I think that's what they did. But okay, so a Spanish product or shop that came in useful.
Well, the supermercados usually had just about everything you need, but And the pharmacias were great as well. But the one that seemed to always show up when we really needed one was those, we called them outdoor stores, but they would have Rachel got some insoles for her boots that helped her. And the day I really needed one of those light day packs, I found one. And it always seemed to come along right at the right moment.
Can you remember the name of the outdoor store, or is it escaped you?
No, just the little ones that are along the way. I know there was one. I don't know, but they're all over the place, and they just sell camp or hiking equipment and the little ends for your walking sticks and things like that.
So the moral of that story is, if you are lacking something, once you get there, it's more than likely you'll be able to pick it up somewhere along the way.
Correct.
Okay. A Camino app or internet resource, you used before, after, or during the Camino?
The Ivar's forum.
Right. Okay. Yep. Yeah,
that's really good. And we actually tended, not all the time, but sometimes we would book ahead. So I actually use booking.com a little bit.
Yeah. It's very easy to use, and you've got the ratings that you can see clearly there. And so it's just like a couple of bookings and a couple of taps on the iPad, and it's all done.
Yeah, for sure.
Good stuff. Okay. So, just before we finish, the Camino is often said to have angels. It's often said the Camino provides. Not my words. It's obviously the belief that many pilgrims have. The Camino definitely has a spirit and magic energy you wouldn't find anywhere else on the planet, in my opinion. Or it's hard to find on the planet. So, do you have any stories from the Camino that show that magic and spirit is very much still alive?
Yeah, we had one day, it was I think my daughter's hardest day, and we were going from Los Arcos, and we hadn't decided if we were going to stop at Viana or Logroño. And all morning she's complaining about how her feet hurt.
That's a hard walk as well.
Yeah, she doesn't want to walk all the way to Logroño, but then we get to Viana and it's only lunchtime. So we decide, okay, we should go. But someone had said while we were eating lunch that, it's Saturday night and there's going to be a festival, because it seemed to be a fiesta every Saturday in Spain, and all the beds will be gone. So we recommend you call ahead. So one of our new friends, Susie, thank you, Susie, for the use of your phone. She loaned her phone. We phoned an albergue to book a bed for, there was four of us traveling at that time. So we booked four beds and we kept going. We kept going to Logroño and we got to the albergue and he said, no, nobody called to book beds. We're full, but wait. He said, oh, just wait over here for a moment. And what happened, it turned out that I had used Susie's phone, but I had called the albergue they stayed in the last night, not the next night, because, I don't know, got mixed up. So I called the wrong place, and of course my Spanish isn't good, so I had not reserved a bed in Logroño. So it turned out the people who were checking in at the same time as us decided, okay, we don't want to stay here because they don't have a kitchen. So there's two beds that were now for us, the four of us. They had two beds, but he said, oh, just wait, just wait. And what he ended up doing is our two friends stayed in those beds, but then he brought my daughter and I to this other room, which is, I think, where they fold their laundry because there was laundry all over, but there was two beds there. So Rachel and I ended up getting a private room, just the bedroom. The bathroom was still down the hall, but we, from not having a place to stay to having a private room, and this hospitalero was so nice, and he probably saw that we were ready to cry. So he was really nice, and he took care of us really well.
I really like that story as well, because I think it holds a little subliminal message for life as well, that sometimes if you can accept that when things don't go to plan, actually is quite possible there's something miles better than you could have ever imagined waiting for you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And that's what I take from that story. And I hope that, you know, these little moments on the Camino, they can always just inspire us, you know, for the challenges that life will throw at us post Camino. And I really like that story. One, because it just proves and shows that the Camino magic and spirit is alive, because maybe in normal hotels, they'd be like, well, I'm sorry, you know, we can't help you. And, you know, you'd be kind of sent packing. But on the Camino, someone's like, how can we accommodate and help these ladies who have traveled so far and walked so far? And that's what I like about that. And so thank you very much for sharing that story, Ali.
You're welcome. I like that story too.
Now, just before we finish, I wonder what would be, sometimes these kind of questions can sound a bit cliche. Sometimes some people can accuse pilgrims of being a bit trite, I guess, because we want to, you know, kind of share all the lessons of the our travels and what 500 miles and walking day after day teaches us. But is there a lesson you took from the Camino that's kind of served you in your post-Camino life, the biggest lesson, most important lesson?
I think being open to new experiences. When I came home in the fall, I heard about a course that I could sign up for, and it's like a self-improvement or personal development course. And I don't think I was ready to do this before the Camino, but I took this course. It's a 6-month thing, and then it's ongoing after that. And I learned so much through that. And then this fall, as I was starting to go through the material again, I realized, oh, this is just like the Camino. This is a pilgrimage, but it's within me.
Yeah.
And I can see the parallels, and it's so beautiful how everything fits together, and it's a circle. And then just today I was thinking about, have you ever heard of Joseph Campbell and the Hero's Journey?
I haven't, but I like the sound of it.
Yeah, it's Joseph Campbell was a scholar, and he studied a lot of ancient civilizations and found every story is basically the same. And stories that you're familiar with, I'm sure, like Star Wars and any other story, basically is based on his hero's journey. And it's where you take a person from everyday life, he answers a call to adventure. He might refuse it at first, but he answers the call. He goes from the known into the unknown. He has to go through different trials and temptations, but he meets mentors and helpers along the way. He probably has to go through some trial, exceptional trial, and has this great revelation, becomes he transforms into a different version of himself, and then he returns back to the known. And this is called the hero's journey. And it's like so perfect for the Camino, and so perfect for this,
well.
Yeah, this other course that I'm taking. It's called Master Key Experience, and it's all the same, and it's just really perfect.
Could you please, I was so encaptured by your description of the story that I forgot the name and the author.
Joseph Campbell.
Joseph Campbell.
And he wrote a book called The Hero with a Thousand Faces.
Right, I'm definitely going to look that up because it sounds like my kind of thing. Hero with a Thousand Faces. I'm sure many of the listeners will as well.
Yeah, and on Netflix, I don't know if it's still there, but there was a short series of interviews with Bill Moyer interviewing Joseph Campbell and talking about this material.
Right, I'm definitely going to look that up. Thank you for that tip off. And when you did say you're kind of thinking of going back to do another one, have you got your eyes on another one when it's possible?
Well, I'd like to do the Camino Portuguese, and probably 2022, I'm hoping, but it all depends on what happens in the world.
Well, if you need any inside info on that, feel free to send me a message because I've done it and it is amazing.
Yeah.
It is amazing. You'll like it.
Yeah, and I'd like to go back and see things that I missed. Like, I'd like to walk that 50 kilometers I missed. I'd like to do some of the little extra things on the Camino Francis that we skipped because we were in too much of a hurry to start with. And that would be my other suggestion. Don't hurry. Take your time. Like, the Samos, the monastery at Samos, I didn't go to, and I've heard now that it's really beautiful.
No, I slept there, yeah.
Yeah, and we just trudged through Osobrero because I wasn't feeling good, and it was, you know, a miserable day, but I'd like to spend time there, and there's so many places I'd like to go back to that I did enjoy, too.
Any chance you could drag the husband along this time, or is that not for him?
He'd probably meet me afterwards again.
Okay, all right.
He's not much of a walker.
he's more your cheerleader.
Yeah, that's right.
Eileen, what I like to try and do at the end of the podcast is finish on a bit of a lighthearted note, on a high note. You know, one of the biggest things on the Camino is the camaraderie. You'll often be walking along and you're in the albergue and someone just digs a guitar out. So music and song is one of the, I'm not going to ask you to sing. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. Don't worry.
That's good.
You can if you want to.
No.
Is there a song that, you know, gets you in the Camino mood or reminds you of the Camino? And you think while someone's planning for their Camino, they could put that song in the background, inspired by Arlene Lasky.
Well, it would have to be Ultrea. Yeah, at our Camino group meetings, we often sing Ultrea. And we have this one fellow in the group named Chuck who sings beautifully, and he sings that and we follow along. And then when we were walking the Camino, we stayed at, I think it's the Santa Maria Convent Albergue in Carrion de las Condes, and they have a little sing-along. And they sang... Well, we sang a bunch of things, but they sang Ultrea as well. And I found that one on YouTube, so you can listen to it there.
Well,
good.
I didn't know that was a song as well as the Camino motto. So
it is.
Ultrea, move forward with courage,
yeah,
is the Camino motto.
Exactly. And I cannot sing, so I'm not going to do it. But I can give you the link to the YouTube.
You don't have to sing. Don't worry about that. It's just I think the music is such a big part of the Camino's magic.
It is.
And I think it's like kind of just nice for people to start building a Camino de Santiago playlist to go with that. Eileen, thank you so much for your stories. Thank you for your tips. Thank you for the inspiration you've provided as well, not only from the recommendations of the books, but from the little kind of subliminal messages that I took from your stories. And I think it's something we can all take some comfort in at this moment in time, where many of our plans have all gone off the rails because of the because Mother Nature's got her own plans by the looks of it. Let's all keep our fingers crossed that it's for the greater good. Just like happened to you and your daughter. So, Arlene, for when you go back to the Camino Portugués, hopefully in 2022, I want to wish you ultra buen camino.
Buen camino to you too.